From the Sky News Centre at 5, Strathclyde police say they're looking for a white man in his 30s in connection with the murder of a pensioner in South Lanarkshire. 76-year-old James Simpson was run down while trying to stop someone stealing his car from outside his home in Ashgill on Tuesday. His son Jamie says the callous act has crushed his family.
5 days ago, my dad was a man deeply content with his life. One day ago, I saw my father lying on a cold table. And listen every day as my mother tells me she no longer wants to live.
Huge blocks of concrete have been dropped onto cars on a busy road in Essex, leaving two people injured. One victim suffered broken bones and internal injuries. Police are treating the incident as attempted murder. Nurse Rebecca Layton, who was questioned about tampering with saline solution at Stepping Hill Hospital, has been sacked. The 27-year-old had all charges against her dropped in September, but she did admit to stealing drugs from the hospital in Stockport. All Iranian diplomats have left the UK after the Foreign Secretary ordered the country's embassy in London to be closed. It was in response to an attack on the British embassy in Tehran, where protesters stormed the building and set fire to the Union flag. Nearly 5.7 million households in England and Wales are struggling to pay their fuel bills. Figures show a quarter of all homeowners are now officially in fuel poverty, which means they're spending 10% or more of their cash on energy. Single mum Nicola Marshall is feeling the pinch and trying hard to keep her daughter warm despite the high cost of fuel.
I've timed it so that as soon as we are out of the house, the heating is off. My heating doesn't go on again until about 6 o'clock at night. But as soon as she goes to bed, I've been recently going to bed at the same time myself just so that I can keep the heating off.
In football, the waiting is almost over for England and the Republic of Ireland. The draw for the group stages of Euro 2012 is just getting underway in Kiev. That's the latest. I'm Tim Jones.
The women in care homes, none of these women are making wild demands. They just want fairness and dignity in retirement. That is what today is about. Women are we rely on, but aren't seen and aren't heard. Taken for granted, undervalued. Today is their day. Today is our day. Today we have a voice. That's why we're here. Solidarity, colleagues!
Hello Bristol and welcome to BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling and helping us review this week's news is PCS Union's South West Regional Vice Chair, Roger Thomas. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news, a pincer movement with the prospects of war in Iran and Syria and nuclear Pakistan even ramping up at the same time as Eurogeddon looms to destroy our jobs and savings at home. As we're being threatened with the mother of all multiple crises for Christmas, we remind ourselves of US plans to invade the Middle East revealed to US General Wesley Clark 10 years ago at the time of 9/11. And do what the mainstream press is afraid of, asking, is all this possibly deliberate? Could Western elites, the bankers, corporations and the military-industrial complex be hoping to gain from their war and our financial demise? Also, London-based Sri Lankan Tamil freedom campaigner Ram Selvarajah is here to help us discuss serious human rights abuses and the legacy of Britain's colonial past in his home country, what used to be called Ceylon. That's in the second hour after six. On to our news review in a minute, but first Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Lows of 6 degrees Celsius tonight and a little rain. This weekend, temperatures highs at 10 Celsius, some hazy sunshine and some showers on Sunday. Next week, highs of 11 Celsius, a mixture of sunny spells and showers and some gusty winds. Next weekend, 10th and 11th of December, highs of 5 Celsius, getting much colder, fairly sunny and possibly windy too. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Time to introduce this week's guests, and joining us this week is PCS Union's South West Regional Vice Chair, Roger Thomas. Hi, Roger. Welcome to Drive Time.
Hello.
Now, Roger, tell us about PCS. What kind of people are members of your union?
Right, well, PCS, or the Public and Commercial Services Union, is the union which covers all civil servants. That's people who work in central government and government agencies. So you have people who work in the Department of Work and Pensions, people who work in taxes with HMRC, people who work in customs, people who work in planning, people who work in just about every area, passports, every sort of area of life, which you know, helps to make, you know, living a better thing, delivering services, you know, in a frontline situation to the public.
Now, a lot of the sort of more right-wing types would say that actually you're a bunch of bureaucrats who stand in the way of private enterprise.
Well, what we are is a bunch of people, very low-paid workers, who have put ourselves into these particular jobs, delivering services directly to the public. We're very anxious that the public gets the best possible service. And, you know, our union campaigns for properly funded public services that enable people to get the benefits, the pensions, the other entitlements that they should have in this society.
And how does your union operate? Because I know that we have quite a lot of problems with the mainstream political parties. In their party conferences, you often have resolutions which are one way or another kicked into touch and not actually accepted as policy by the main political party. So how do we know that what your leaders are saying is actually what your members really want?
Well, the general policy of the union is decided at an annual delegate conference every year. Delegates are elected from branches around the country and then attend that conference. Policy decisions are made at that conference. We also elect annually a national executive committee who run the union on a direct date, on a month-by-month basis. And obviously we have the officers of the union who are directly accountable to the national executive and ultimately responsible to conference.
Well, certainly in the past, a lot of unions, leaders, just as political leaders, have actually lost touch with their membership and gone off on their own thing, because they tend to, once they've got that power, they hang on to it.
Well, I think PCS is a very membership orientated union. It's a very membership organised union in terms of the fact that most of the activists are lay activists with a core of officers who actually assist in the development of policy and activity.
And we're also joined by Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. Martin, one of the phrases that's been being bandied around about the economy this week is from Keynes. It's the animal spirits. And apparently the animal spirits are doing quite a lot to drive the economy. What are these animal spirits?
Well, I mean, what Keynes was pointing out in the 1930s, and just to explain to the listeners, he was probably the most important British economist of the 21st century. He was actually a liberal, but it was his ideas that underpinned the welfare state, basically. If you study economics at any level, you're going to come across this guy. Basically, he pointed out that the decisions that are made by stock markets are often quite irrational decisions. They're decided on the animal spirits of investors. So they go through bouts of irrational exuberance where everybody invests in new canals, new railways, South Sea bubbles, and everything seems to be rising and everybody's getting more and more hysterical. And then, of course, it crashes and they go into a sort of morbid depression and they won't put their hands in their pockets to invest anymore because they're just not feeling very well. And, of course, that is how markets work. And one of the problems we've had with the neoliberal ascendancy over the last 30 years is they think it's all about maths and that all we're talking about is numbers and figures. And what Keynes is pointing out, no, it's about psychology. And because it's about psychology, you've got to be much more careful about how you deal with stock markets than otherwise, because they're not actually based on rational decision making. They can go off in way off beam in any direction, and that's why basically they have to be controlled. Whether you're going to have a stock market or not, if you're going to have one, you've got to make sure that you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And that's basically, we used to know all of this. The Keynesian revolution in the 30s and the 40s was the underpinning of the modern welfare state, and of course it's all been forgotten. It's all still there in the textbooks. They just threw the textbooks into the bin. And that includes New Labour and the Tories.
Now, this idea of animal spirits, psychology, isn't that actually massively affected by the press and the way the press comments on
Absolutely.
What's going on in the economy?
Absolutely. So, of course, it's all a question of who you spoke to last and how they're feeling. Keynes also spoke about what he called beauty contests. And in the 30s, beauty contests weren't like the beauty contests we're used to. What they used to do is print in the newspaper pictures of 10 young ladies, and then a panel of 100 would rank these young ladies from 1 to 10. And then the punters who were participating in the contest would then write in and put the young ladies 1 to 10 as they saw them. And if you got them the same as the 100 people who were on the panel, then you won. And then you went into a lottery to be picked out if you were one of those that had won. And he made the point that this is how stock markets work. You only make money by being with the herd, basically. If the stock market's going up and you know it's going to crash, even in your heart of hearts, if you just hold back, you'll lose money. You've got to go with the herd.
But surely the
herd
goes
when you're on the way down.
Surely the herd may go one way, but the insider dealers and the inside traders, the people who know maybe tomorrow or the next day there's going to be a bad announcement about a particular company, they may go a different way.
Indeed, and that's one of the problems with markets. They're not free, fair or equal. I mean, basically, they did a study recently that showed that the Congress people in the United States, they've all got big share portfolios. To be a politician in the US, you've got to be a millionaire, let's face it. They've all got big share portfolios, and their share portfolios mysteriously do about 10 to 15% better than everybody else's. And that, of course, would be nothing to do with the fact that they sit on these committees deciding what the regulations are so that they know what's coming down the line and they get on the phone to their brokers and say, hey, word to the wise. That's what goes on. It goes on in the markets all the time.
Well, it's been a big week this week, and we've had the Chancellor George Osborne's autumn statement as well as the biggest strike for a generation. But George Osborne's big chance this week, it was to reassure the country and the markets that his plan A is on track and that he knows what he's doing.
Mr. Speaker, all that we are doing today, sticking to our deficit plan to keep interest rates as low as possible, increasing the supply of credit to pass those low rates onto families and businesses, rebalancing our economy with an active enterprise policy and new infrastructure, help with the cost of living on fuel duty and rail fares. All this takes Britain in the right direction. It cannot... Mr. Speaker, it cannot transform our economic situation overnight. People in this country understand the problems that Britain faces. They can watch the news any night of the week and see for themselves the crisis in the Eurozone and the scale of the debt burden we carry. And people know that the promises of quick fixes and more spending this country can't afford at times like this are like the promises of a quack doctor selling a miracle cure. We do not offer that today. What we offer is a government that has a plan to deal with our nation's debts to keep interest rates low. A government determined to support businesses and support jobs. A government committed to take Britain safely through the storm. Leadership for tough times. That's what we offer, and I commend this statement to that.
Well, basically, we're coming back to Keynes, what he was mentioning there. We're trying to keep interest rates low. Interest rates are rock bottom, but the economy is still not going anywhere. And Keynes pointed this out in the 1930s. This is a liquidity trap. Nobody will borrow money, even at virtually zero interest rates, to set up a business while the demand in the economy is falling off a cliff. This is all in the textbook. The textbooks that George Osborne hasn't read because he's got a history degree.
Martin, you really mustn't swear. Yes, okay, there's no need for that at all.
I'm sorry.
Roger, your take on George Osborne's speech this week.
Well, I think it's more of the same. It's more for the rich, and it's more of the dismantling of the post-war settlement that Martin was talking about, the destruction of the welfare state. I mean, what we're seeing for public sector workers is the threat of 710,000 more jobs to go in the public sector. That's more more services that are provided by public servants, which are going to impact directly on people.
Now, Roger, I hear a lot of your other people, certainly from your union, saying that these are ideological. What do you see is Osborne's ideal? You know, what is the ideal that's driving this if these cuts are ideological?
Well, the ideal is for George Osborne is to transfer as much wealth to the wealthy away from the poorest in society. And if I give one example, I mean, that is the changes to child tax credit, which will propel a further 100,000 children into poverty in Britain. If this was a government that was seriously interested, as he talked about families, then he'd be looking to waste to alleviate poverty. And obviously one of the main issues is the question of pensions and the question of the fuel poverty of people up and down the country, which I think has been in the news this week. And I think the fact that for many pensioners it is a decision, and for many ordinary people in jobs even, it is a decision now whether they put the heating on or whether they feed themselves during the course of the winter. And obviously in terms of pensioners, then more poverty for pensioners will mean more deaths during a cold spell in the winter.
Now, Martin, one of the headlines on the front page of the Independent yesterday actually was "The rich get richer and the poor get poorer."
Well, that's a fundamental problem. It's totally unfair, as everybody can see.
But hang on a minute, because this happened under Labour. The divide Absolutely. Between rich and poor actually got worse under your last Labour government.
Absolutely, touche. And of course, the reason is that New Labour bought into the Thatcherite consensus. That was what they were all about. I don't think the trade unions ever did. I know PCS isn't affiliated to the Labour Party, but even those that are affiliated to the Labour Party never bought into this, even though they're actually the paymasters for the Labour Party. But the Labour Party was captured by vested interests in the City of London. And that's what happens to Labour politics in this country and every other country. Look at Obama in the US, who came in with a fantastic surge of support and immediately sold everything out. That's the kind of thing that happens. But that doesn't mean that we give up the fight.
Now, Shadow Chancellor Ed Balls, despite being recorded several times on television sitting very, very close to the Chancellor on different two-seater sofas, was merciless in his reply to Osborne's autumn statement.
Growth flatlining down this year, next year and the year after. Unemployment rising. Well over £100 billion more borrowing than the Chancellor planned a year ago. More borrowing than the plan which the Chancellor inherited at the last general election, Mr. Speaker. And as a result, his economic and fiscal strategy is in tatters. After 18 months in office, the verdict is in. Plan A has failed, and it has failed colossally. With prices rising, with unemployment soaring, families, pensioners and businesses already know it's hurting. And with billions of pounds more in borrowing to pay for rising unemployment, today we find out the truth. It's just not working. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister likes to say you can't borrow your way out of a crisis. Can the Chancellor confirm that is exactly what he has been forced to do?
I think that's a very telling point. In actual fact, the deficit is increasing. And of course, the numpties who are running the country think that if they cut the deficit, then the deficit gets smaller. But anybody who has studied economics at any level knows that attempts to cut budget deficits often increase budget deficits because they knock the economy into touch. And we used to know that. That's all in chapter 6 of the textbook. But again, they're just coming out with this stuff which was old hat in the 19th century, and they're going to get a big shock because the deficit's going to get bigger. We're going to lose our credit rating. There's a real possibility of banking collapse. And we'll see all these public school boys flailing around in the water with oil on it, burning.
What are your thoughts about this, Roger? The growth flatlining, unemployment up, £150 billion more borrowing, and the economy in tatters, according to Ed Balls.
Well, Britain is the sixth wealthiest country in the world. There's plenty of money in this country. And if we look at the rich and most privileged, some of them in the cabinet, millionaires and so on, if we were to take a larger slice of taxation from these particular people, then we could actually start to create jobs, start to provide services which would create jobs, take people off of benefits and out of poverty, and start to move society forward. There's, you know, our union has a proud tradition on the question of climate jobs, you know, pushing that kind of development of the economy. But these are all areas which the present government seem to be stepping away from. So, they seem to be totally obsessed with the issue of making themselves richer and the rest of us poorer, and to the detriment of all of us. And obviously that's affecting people through loss of jobs and then through cuts in benefits.
Martin, this all sounds very dysfunctional. Why is it that we're in this state? Because you would expect a government to be there to actually try and manage this. It looks as if Osborne is just completely failing to do that.
Well, you can expect that from the Conservatives, as they've been dominated by neoliberal ideology for a generation. But of course, Macmillan in the 1950s would not be cutting public expenditure at the moment. The Conservative Party leadership used to understand why you didn't do silly things like that. And of course, the Liberals, Keynes was a Liberal, and they are actually betraying everything their party supposedly stood for, just like New Labour have betrayed their own principles as well. But we should get back. You know, people basically got to start asking serious questions of the politicians and make them stand up for the things that they claim to believe in.
Well, at the same time as the autumn statement, the Office for Budget Responsibility brought out their report, and it didn't leave a lot for Chancellor George Osborne to smile about.
Well, in many ways, I think the Chancellor's been hoisted up his own rather noble petard by this document, the OBR document, because, yes, the transparency in this has been, it's well appreciated by journalists and people in the markets, but this contains so many gems undermining to some of the case for that he puts. I mean, I'll just give you two or three of them. He blames the Eurozone for the problem. The OBR has downgraded the Eurozone, has upgraded Eurozone growth and downgraded British growth. That undermines the idea that it's Eurozone's fault. He also says the youth contract, the OBR say, the youth contract won't create any more jobs. It'll just shift jobs from old to young. Another example, 710,000 public sector jobs now lost, say the OBR, rather than 400,000 predicted before. And then the fundamental shield which the government will use in these very tough times to say, look, we're doing the right thing, is the rate of interest the government's paying, the so-called gilt yield. Yes, it's very low. He claimed £22 billion had been saved. But this document shows that actually, under low interest rates, you also get much lower taxes from savings. You net that all off, the net benefit is $5 or $6 billion, not $22 billion. Compare that with the increase in unemployment benefits, and you're not really seeing the net benefit from this tough fiscal action that he would want to demonstrate.
That was Channel 4 News' Faisal Islam with his analysis of the OBR, Office for Budget Responsibility's reaction, or their report, which is, came out at the same time as George Osborne's autumn statement. Now, Roger Thomas, you're from the PCS Union, Regional Vice Chair. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it shows that, like I said before, they've got one fixed idea about who they are interested in. One particular section of society is what they're interested in. And I think what we have to start thinking about in terms of our politics in Britain and the discussions that we have in the trade unions and so on is the fact that we are millions and they are few, and that we have interests and we have rights. And those rights are to certain things: the right to a roof, the right to food, shelter, a job, education, a health service when we require it. And these are absolute fundamentals, and these are the things that the Tories are now looking to take away from us. And I think one of the things that is a central part of all of these policies in terms of the public sector is that they want to push through privatisation and effectively the destruction of the welfare state, something that our fathers and our grandfathers and grandmothers and mothers fought to have and cherished when it arrived after the Second World War.
Now, this is all pretty grim stuff, Martin. Is there any chance that George Osborne will be removed from his path of mass privatisation?
I think they're not going to fulfil all of these ideological fantasies that they're talking about. I think part of it is really just stupidity. It's not just that they're looking after their own. They really believe the kind of rubbish they're coming out with. But they're going to get a shock. And I think that at the end of the day, he's going to be removed because the Liberal Democrats, who have a reasonable tradition in these matters, going back for a generation or more, they are ultimately going to pull the plug, and so they should. And we should welcome that. Everybody should start recognising how dangerous the situation is, and we can't afford any more messing around. We've actually got to try and rescue the situation, which has got worse in the last 18 months. The Liberal Democrats need to go away and have a word with themselves about what they're backing.
So you're pinning all your hopes on the Lib Dems with your fingers crossed behind your back?
Well, if they don't do the right thing, we will crucify them at the next election. They better have a think about that.
Well, we had what is the biggest political rally in a generation in the city this week. About 15,000 public sector workers marched through Bristol, ending up almost filling Castle Park over a further round of changes being forced on their pension schemes. The real news, though, was it was the first time in over a century that the head teachers' union, the NAHT, has been on strike. Here's Anthony Austin, that's Bristol's representative of the NAHT, his little speech to the rally.
I'm very, very pleased to welcome Anthony Austin, who is representing the National Association of Head Teachers.
Hey, I'm here as representative of the Virgin Union. It's the first time in 114 years we've ever taken any strike action. We balloted our members, 53% replied, and 78% of those immediately said, yes, let's take action. And that's increased. The highest turnout of any union here today is incredible. We support what you're doing immensely. We're public sector workers. schools, as we know nationally, providing the engine house for the future out of this mess the government have got us into. So I'm here to show solidarity. I'm not going to say any more, but thanks for the tremendous turnout. Bye-bye.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? The National Association of Head Teachers on strike for the first time in 114 years. And I tell you, he'll be very, very pleased about that. My father, because he was a head teacher in inner city schools for many, many years. And he took early retirement in the 1980s because he said, this was when the last Tory government was running the show. He said, they haven't got a clue and I can't be bothered to try and make an effort for these people anymore. And there's been a lot of discontent about the way the education system has been run. And you've got to remember that the people in the education system are pretty bright. That's why they're teachers. And they're fed up.
Well, Jackie Stewart was one of the speakers too. She's from Gloucestershire Police Branch of the local government workers' union, Unison.
My name's Jackie Stewart and I'm Chair and Assistant Branch Secretary of Gloucestershire Police Branch, Unison. I'm Chair of our South West Sector Police and Justice Group. I've worked for Gloucestershire Police for 24 years now, near enough, mostly within the 999 call handling control rooms, but for the last 4.5 as full-time Unison branch officer. I'm very proud to be a public sector worker and I'm very happy to be asked to come and speak to all of you about the pensions issues from our sector group members' point of view. For me and for our members in Police and Justice, integrity, what's right and fairness are key. They underpin everything we believe in and what we stand up to defend on a daily basis. And that's why the unfairness and the deceit of these proposals strike a chord with us so resonantly. How is it fair that they are attacking our pensions again when we've already future-proofed them in the pension campaign 6 years ago? We aren't living any longer than we were then, are we? And where is their integrity when they won't tell us, or more importantly in some ways, the general public, the truth about what these changes truly mean and why they're proposing them?
Now that was Jackie Stewart from the Gloucestershire Police Branch of Unison. Now Roger Thomas is here for the Regional Vice Chair of PCS, Public and Commercial Services Union. Roger, can you just explain a bit about this whole pension business? Because we did have a bit of a debacle about 3 or 4 years ago over pensions. That was sorted out and now it's reared its ugly head again.
Yeah, well, a few years ago, the government, then the Labour government, carried out a pensions review and there was a settlement. And on the basis of that review and the review that Lord Hutton did for the present coalition government, there was an acceptance that those pensions were sustainable and that the cost to the taxpayer would actually fall, and that, consequently we could carry on those arrangements into the future because they were affordable. Now, the situation we have with the present government is that they've decided to take part of what Hutton said and to ignore other parts of what was said. And the part that they want to take is that they want to cut, one, the value of our pensions. They want to cut what each local government, each health worker, each civil servant gets on their retirement, and they want to use that money to transfer not to fund our pension pot but actually to send directly to the Treasury in terms of reducing the deficit. So it's a situation of almost working in the public sector and being taxed. I think if every worker up and down the country, if somebody came to them and said, if the Chancellor came to them and said, well, because you're working for such and such a company or for such and such an organisation, we're going to impose an extra tax on you, then I think people would be justifiably upset. And I think that's the situation that public sector workers find themselves in.
But I mean, isn't the reason this is happening simply to bring your pensions as public sector workers in line with private sector pensions, which are actually less beneficial to to individuals?
Well, the figures actually show that there is very little difference between the average public sector and a private sector pension. But what is the difference is that what we've seen is in the private sector is that there's been a reduction in the number of final settlement schemes. And that is primarily because company bosses during the 80s and 90s took contributions breaks, and those schemes became unsustainable in their terms, and they ended them. And I don't see how forcing public sector workers to have a poor pension is actually going to benefit ordinary private sector workers up and down the country. And if I could say that, you know, actually the average civil service pension is around £4,500. It's hardly a king's ransom, and it's certainly not gold-plated or anything like.
Well, even though trade unions are actually much more democratic than political parties and have far more members, one thing you never get on the BBC is even extracts from political speeches heard at union rallies. So we're going to hear one of the speeches in its entirety from Wednesday from a former guest on this show, and you can hear him in the archives too, if you like. It's National Vice Chair of the Public and Commercial Services Union, John McInally.
Here today in Bristol, and in every town and city throughout the country, millions of workers are sending a clear message to the coalition government. We will not allow you to steal our hard-earned pensions rights. We will also oppose your cuts programme. It is an attempt to make us pay for the mess made by your friends in the banking industry. And we will defend not just our terms and conditions, but our communities too. Because these cuts are unnecessary. There is an alternative based in tax justice, job creation and investment. And the austerity programme, of which the attack on pensions is a part, is a disaster for the vast amount of people in this country. It means that unemployment is up to 2.6 million. It means youth unemployment is up to 1 million. It means pay freezes for us, where the richest 1% stuff their bank accounts with obscene unearned wealth. It's about the biggest transfer of wealth and power in history through a privatisation programme that means the end of free education and free health. And we saw what happened in Greece when Papandreou dared to suggest that the people should be consulted on the cuts programme there. And the cuts and privatisation programme in this country too is also a fundamental attack on democracy. No one voted for these cuts, and only the multimillionaires will benefit from them. So we have to be clear about this. The problem is not that they're cutting too fast and cutting too deep. The problem is that they are cutting at all. This government has no mandate for these cuts, and are being carried out on behalf of a tiny elite at the expense of the overwhelming majority. And who is it that's carrying out these attacks? What a shower. David Cameron, an obscenely rich ex-advertising executive with a personal fortune of £68 million. There is Francis Maud. This is the man who was caught fiddling his expenses to claim for one of his four homes. And then there's the tax-dodging Chancellor, George Osborne. Then there's Nick Clegg, another wealthy con man and professional liar. And finally, there's the biggest drip in British politics, Danny Alexander. Many of these people are simply unfit to hold public office. They have no moral authority. They're devoid of any decency or loyalty, other than to the bankers and the big business backers who bankroll them and who will see them all right when they are kicked out of the office. There can be no excuse for this attack on pensions. Public sector pensions are affordable, they're sustainable. Pensions are only deferred wages, and low pay means low pensions. The average civil service pension after full service is only £80 a week. Hardly gold-plated, hardly a fortune. The truth is this. These people want us to endure a lifetime of low paid, followed by an impoverished old age. They are beneath contempt. They have sought to divide public and private sector workers, but the reality is, and you won't see this in the pages of the Daily Mail, is that public sector pensions are actually comparable in cost to private sector pensions. The real truth is that millions of public sector workers have had their pensions stolen from them. And while the government claims to support the private sector, the reality is public spending cuts are cutting just as many, if not more, jobs in the private sector. For every job that goes in the public sector, at least one, and probably two, will go in the private sector. But we must speak out loud and clear for public services. Let's be clear, public sector spending is not a debt, it is an investment in people, it's an investment in communities, and it's an investment in services. And when rich Tory ministers talk about fairness between public and private sector pensions, what they really mean is a race to the bottom. They want to impose on us the worst pensions they possibly can. And that is why our slogan is fair pensions for all. Yes, we are fighting to defend our own terms and conditions, but we're also fighting for decent state pensions. It is an obscenity that the state pension is £102 a week while the poverty level is £170 a week. And that is why we must stand together to defeat this attack. The real division in society is not between public sector and private sector workers. The real division is between the haves and the have-nots. The real division is between working people, the overwhelming majority, and the tiny elite of spivs and gangsters who have never done an honest day's work in their life. These people make their fortunes by gambling in the stock exchange and privatising your services. That is not socially useful work. It is legalised theft. And the real division is between those who believe society should be run for the people and those who believe that society should be run for profit. But the truth is this, that they couldn't get away with it if it were not for the fact that the Labour Party is committed to protecting corporate interests of the billionaires rather than representing working people. Ed Miliband said he cannot support this strike. Well, we have a message for Ed Miliband. You're a disgrace. We will never ever forgive your craven toading to the bankers and to the Tory press, and we'll never forgive your treachery. If the main political parties in this country are incapable of representing the interests of the vast majority, then maybe it's time we've done it ourselves. We will use all campaigning methods to defeat these attacks. We will oppose them in the courts. We will organise in the workplace. But we must also organise in our communities too. And I would urge everybody here today to support not just your trade union, but also support the Bristol Anti-Cuts Alliance or the Anti-Cuts Alliance in your own hometown. And if you don't have an Anti-Cuts Alliance in your own hometown, well, set one up. We give full support and solidarity to the Pensioners Alliance, to the students, to the school students and to the Occupy movement. And we do so because this government has targeted the most vulnerable in society to bear the burden of the cuts. Women, children, the unemployed, the sick and the disabled. And that is why we must win this battle. After this brilliant show of strength and solidarity, we must prepare for further action if the government does not concede. My union, PCS, believes that the TUC must announce at its upcoming meeting as an absolute minimum the organisation of another National Day of Action involving all the unions in strike today, early in 2012. But we can escalate this dispute by getting even more unions on board, including those private sector workers fighting for their pensions rights too. All targeted, selective and rolling action taken by individual unions must be coordinated by the TUC for maximum impact. But the way to win is to demonstrate our power as we have done so today, striking together, standing together. National Coordinated industrial action is a key to defeating the attack on pensions and the cuts themselves. Let me say in conclusion, today we have found our voice. Let us make sure they hear us, because you know what? We are better than them. Let's have confidence in the justice of our case. Let's have confidence in our collective power. We can win, and if we stick together, we will win. Thank you.
That's John McEnany's speech there, and all 9 minutes of it. I think he was supposed to be 4 minutes, but he took an extra three this week. The biggest political rally in a generation in the city. Now, Roger Thomas is here. He's the regional vice chair of the same union. What do you make of what your leader had to say there? Because he almost seems to be setting himself up as he was saying, for example, if the mainstream political parties can't do this, maybe we'll have to do it ourselves, almost as a politician himself.
Well, maybe we will have to do it ourselves. And I think the point is that working class people have to make very serious decisions these days because of the level of the attacks that we're facing. And in that situation, it may be that if the politicians as available at the moment in the main political parties, Labour, Liberals and Tories, don't offer any kind of solutions, then maybe we will have to look for creating our own political representation. And it's something that PCS has been discussing over a number of years and discussing with our members in terms of how we look to the future. That's not to say that we're going to go down that road immediately, but it's something that we have to take seriously, because Labour and the Tories are both together on the issues that cuts are necessary to get rid of the deficit.
Now, just flicking through the figures of membership figures for the main political parties, Roger, your union has got more members, as about a quarter of a million, than both of the two main political parties, the Conservatives and Labour.
Well, that's because we represent ordinary working class people, ordinary people in offices up and down the region and up and down the country. And, you know, people in our offices hold a whole multitude of political views. But what the union has done is it's taken its position from the idea that we must defend the jobs of our members, the services that we provide to the public, and to make sure that we seriously represent those that we are put in place to represent. And that's what we've pursued, and that's what we'll continue to pursue. And if that means that we've got to take up the question of political representation, then ultimately that might be something that we have to do. But I'd like to say a few words about the demonstration on Wednesday, because I think it shows the huge level of support. A friend of mine did some research on the numbers involved in demonstrations in his city, and it's not a generation, it's probably two or three generations, because the biggest rally we can look to is 1932 in the city of Bristol. There were around 20,000 workers on that demonstration on Wednesday, and those people have families which across the city, and you know, it covered virtually every section of society on in Bristol society on Wednesday. There were people from the hospitals, people from the civil service, people from local government, people from all walks of life, people who work for the Ministry of Defence, all walks of life. And I think it was absolutely showed the level of anger and disgust at what the Tories are doing, not just on the attack on pensions, but also the attack on jobs and services.
Now, Marina Morris has been out on the streets of Bristol this week to find out what you think of the public sector pension strike.
Do you support the public sector pension strike?
Well, not really, no, because certain sections of our society have had it too good for too long, and at the end of the day, they're guaranteed a pension, whereas people who've slummed it out in the private sector are really just praying for their wages to be paid after every month. The last few incompetent governments have got us into such a massive debt that it's got to be paid for. People think they could just shovel tons and tons of money and there's no consequence. Unfortunately, there is, and we're paying for it now. Everyone suffers, and it's suffering now to protect the future generations. I mean, I'm not a capitalist. I mean, I'm a socialist, but seeing what's happened in the last 20 years under this so-called New Labour in Blair, in Brown, how they wasted everything, not only economically but morally, how our country's degenerated. You know, it's incompetent governments, and it's worse in Europe, because I mean, you've got basket case economies in Europe who really frittered away the money that they should have used constructing. I mean, New Labour have frittered away billions of our pounds, throwing it away on lunatic schemes and things. And this is the payback. And people have got to suffer now, but they don't want to suffer because they've had so easy. That's it. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to me in the future, because I won't have a big pension. Just pray and hope.
No, I don't support the strike against the pensions, because my parents are both getting older, and by the time they retire, they're going to need the money, because obviously their jobs at the moment are what's keeping them going. My mum's lucky to still have a job. If it goes, then a lot of families won't, like, have anything to live off.
Yes, because I think it's important, especially for younger people. I think it's really important for their futures, really. I mean, I have a son who's 26 and he works in the public sector, and his pension's going to be awful. And I think they're just expecting too much from us.
Well, I'm not affected. I think it has to be seen in a context that, you know, over the last few years, local government workers especially have been on a restricted rate of pay. Although the pension rates are inflation-proofed, moderately generous, what has to be borne in mind, in comparison with private sector jobs, the rates paid to private sector employees are much higher. Therefore, they get a chance to invest the additional money elsewhere.
No, I don't, because I don't like it.
Should Chancellor George Osborne change direction?
They should change slightly in that they're still frittering away billions to foreign aid, which is going to be wasted on corrupt governments, on criminals, and, you know, the dregs of society. They're still getting their pound of flesh, whereas the decent people are suffering. This society has degenerated in the last 40 or 50 years because the governments have really got the priorities all wrong. It should be really for the decent human beings of our society, not for the dregs in the scum that they seem to pander to, because they've got a kind of liberal, left-wing kind of agenda, because it's trendy.
Because he's kind of ruining families by doing this. Some parents who are older and have still got young children, they need money to support their families. He's kind of just ruining a lot of stuff for other people. So.
Because hopefully the public will make him change direction, and I think he needs to. I think it's important for the country.
I don't think he should change for the time being, but I think he needs to keep his fingers on the pulse to, you know, see whether his methods are working or not.
Now, Regional Vice Chair of the Public and Commercial Services Union, Roger Thomas, pretty clear message there. Why should public service unions and workers keep their pensions and decent pension rights while everyone else's are being reined back?
Right, well, first thing is, pensions in the public sector, on average, are not gold-plated. They are not very high. People in the civil service in my area, you know, we work in jobs which are relatively low paid. One of the sort of kickbacks from that contract that we signed with the government was that in old age we would be able to retire with some dignity and would be able to exist on the pension that we provided. The situation that we're faced with now is that increasingly the pensions are being cut, and it will become a situation where we'll be forced into poverty, and in that situation we'll be forced onto benefits. And I think, you know, this comes out of the changes which the government have pushed through. So I think, you know, it's not a question of, you know, if I have a terrible pension or I don't have a pension, that somebody in the private sector or somebody elsewhere is going to be better off. We need to put the blame where it actually really lies, and that's with the banks, who caused the crisis in the first place by acting in an unregulated fashion, pursuing pell-mell profit and greed, the bankers' bonuses in the City of London. The banks are still paying out bonuses of hundreds of thousands of pounds to these top executives. The difference between the pay of top executives and the people at the top of the society and those who are actually working in very important public services, like in hospitals, ambulance workers, people who are working to provide pensions and so on, is that they have low pay, whereas the people at the top are still earning fantastic amounts in bonuses and so on. So we, the public, the taxpayer, bailed out the banks. Now, in that situation, you'd think that we could actually get some of that back in terms of reining in the bankers' bonuses and taking some of that wealth and actually putting it into the production of real wealth in terms of manufacturing jobs and in terms of boosting the provision of decent, proper public services in health, education and elsewhere, and actually productively taking the economy forward.
Now, Martin, one of the things that we were hearing from in the Vox Pops there was that this has got to be paid for. This is a big mistake of Labour, the previous government, massive deficit, and somehow it's got to be paid for. So they're taking this, skimming a little bit of cream off the top of the public sector pension scheme to pay for the Labour mistakes.
Well, the Labour mistake was not regulating the City of London. Also, of course, Gordon Brown bailed out the banks in 2008. And all those who say that was the wrong thing to do, I'd like them to say, so your policy is not to bail the banks out. I said this earlier at Speaker's Corner at Occupy Bristol to a Conservative voter quite clearly. I said, well, did you believe in bailing out the banks or not? Of course, if you're a true free marketeer, you don't bail the banks out. And then the banks would have collapsed and the ATMs in this country were about to close down so people couldn't get any money out and people would lose all their savings. That's what happened in Argentina. Now, we bailed the banks out and that's why we're in debt. It's not to do with public sector workers at all. And of course, most of these people are economic illiterates. And when the economy goes down the drain with Captain Osborne and Captain Cameron at the helm, they are going to be shocked. But don't expect any sympathy from me when they lose their pensions and they lose their jobs. They deserve everything they get if they're going to take that kind of attitude. I will just laugh.
Okay, Martin. And Transparency International has recently published its Transparency Index, which measures each country in the world on perceptions of the levels of corruption in public life. And I'm joined by Marina Morris, who has a report about that right now.
Hello. Transparency International has recently published its Transparency Index, which measures each country in the world on perception of the levels of corruption in public life. The underlying questions relate to issues like the prevalence of bribery, the enforcement of anti-corruption laws, and public access to information. The index compares 182 countries with a score from 0 to 10, with a perfect 10 score representing no corruption. According to the index, New Zealand is the least corrupt, with a score of 9.5, whilst North Korea and Somalia are tied with a score of 1 as the most corrupt. Within Europe, it is the Scandinavian and Benelux countries who score the best, with Denmark and Finland equal second, Sweden fourth and Norway sixth. The United Kingdom came equal 16th, with a score of 7.8. In general, a Western European country score well compared to the most of the rest of the world. Troubled Greece, however, came equal 80th, with a score of 3.4, and Eastern European countries generally fared even worse. Russia and Belarus came equal 144th, with a score of 2.4, and the lowest scoring European country was my native Ukraine, this 152nd, with a score of 2.3. Ukraine and the European Union disagree over the treatment of former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko, who is currently serving a 7-year prison sentence for exceeding her power as a Prime Minister in signing a deal with Russia, securing Ukraine's gas supply. At the time, January 2009, in a price and payment dispute, Russia had cut off Ukraine gas supply, leaving many Ukrainians without heating in the midst depths of winter. The sentence also prohibits Mrs. Tymoshenko from participating in political life for 3 years after her sentence runs out. It has also been condemned by Russia as a political witch hunt. As a consequence, close the political and economic ties between Ukraine and the European Union looks unlikely in the foreseeable future. At lower levels of public life than the possible muzzling of effective political opposition, the salaries of many Ukrainians' public servants remain generally low compared to the cost of living, and bribes or gratuities are regarded by many as a necessity of dealing with the public sector or a necessity of survival. Ukraine's pensions are generally low, while the formerly public assets of the communist system are under the control of mega-rich oligarchs.
Thanks very much, Marina. Now, Roger from the PCS Union. Your leader, John McAnally, was saying in his speech there, anyone would think that we were really much higher up this corruption index, because this is one of the indications. This is if people in public life channel wealth away from the population towards their own crony friends.
Well, I think that is clearly what is happening, and I think there are interests which are not which are not those of the average person in the street. They are those of the top financial institutions, and they are those of a privileged elite in society. I might have made it the point earlier, but you know, we have a cabinet full of millionaires, full of old Etonians, most of them men, who are pushing through policies which are fundamentally to the detriment of the average person in this country. And I make one last point, is that the public services that civil servants, teachers, people in local government and in the health service provide are absolutely precious in terms of the fact that they make our society worthwhile to live in. They make us a civilized society. Without those services, then our lives will be very, very bleak, as they were for our grandparents in the 1930s, where if you wanted to get a doctor to look at your child, you had to have the money available to do that. In order to get medicine, you had to have that money available to do it. If you didn't have it, then your child died or suffered from serious repercussions to that illness. Do we want to go back to that situation? No. But that's where George Osborne and David Cameron want to send us. And that's why I would encourage everybody to get involved in fighting the cuts and fighting against these attacks on pensions, because they affect every single one of us. We don't want poverty. We want a future, and we want hope rather than the despair that this government is offering.
I think it's quite interesting. We're talking about Transparency International's league table there. And, of course, what they mean is corruption inside the individual country concerned. So the UK's 17th ranking only deals with transactions within the UK. But just think what the UK does. Think about what British Aerospace does when it goes to Saudi Arabia. Where does Saudi Arabia fit on the list? And, of course, in actual fact, what British companies do is they corrupt other countries' governments. So when we say all these other countries are corrupt, no, we corrupt them. Who pays the bribe? We pay the bribes. They take the bribes. And in fact, Britain is the heart of corruption. The City of London is where all the dirty dealing really goes on, apart from the Cayman Islands.
Okay, Martin Summers, thank you very much. And also thanks to this week's guest, PCS Union Southwest Regional Vice Chair Roger Thomas. After the news, a pincer movement with the prospects of war in Iran and Syria and nuclear Pakistan ramping up at the same time as Eurogeddon looms to destroy our jobs and our savings at home. That's all after News Internationals. Yes, they're everywhere. Sky News at 6.
This is BCFM 93.2, the community station for Bristol. Listen live online at bcfm.org.uk. BCFM News from the Sky News.